Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on private business when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right, but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources. This information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? Knowing how information is gathered, what information is stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. If you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call the law school, 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for the free general law CD package. Now, that number again, 417-273-4967. Remember, the general law package is free. Let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. Just call the law school and ask for it. It's 417-273-4967 to order yours. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. All right, we've been talking about private business. I talked to you the other day about houses and why it is that when you buy a house, keep it for 30 years and live in it, it has a net loss, a minimum net loss of $90,000 plus. I've often said, rather than buy a house, why don't you buy a twin beach and burn up that $90,000 in airplane gas? The chicks will love it and you'll have more fun. Then last time we took a look at my brother Jim, he went into silver. He made more money off of silver than I did buying a house. I bought a lot of houses, and I finally learned how to count when I was 37, and I stopped buying those houses and living in them, paying interest and all of the expenses on it. And I showed you how to build a house for $25,000. I mean, you can build a pretty nice house, 1,200-1,400 square foot house for $25,000. Do it right now. Today. Of course, you have to roll up your sleeves and go to work, and that's what Americans had been doing, you know, up until the 1930s when FDR came along and said, gee, we ought to have longer than 7-year mortgages. We ought to have 10-year mortgages. Now they're out to 20 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25, 30, 35, 40-year mortgages. They got mortgages today that never amortize. You just pay forever, like paying rent. I don't know why anybody'd want to do that. It certainly isn't any way to make money, but, you know, most people, I guess, are educated now, and they don't have to be concerned about making money. So let's take a look at a couple of in Dissy here concerning this thing called private business. You hear me talk about private business and public business. Well, the difference between public and private business is the difference between practicing the Fourth Amendment or not. And the Fourth Amendment guarantees you, the right to be protected in your person, houses, papers, and effects. That does not mean that the information that you give to people is private. If you don't give anybody the information, that's pretty private. My old daddy told me one time, he said, "Son, when you know something and nobody else knows it, that's a secret. When you tell one other person, it's no longer a secret." When you go to the bank and fill out a financial statement, before you filled out the financial statement, your financial business was personal and private. It was your secret. Once you filled out the financial statement or the profit and loss statement, balance sheet, etc., and gave it to the banker, it's no longer a secret. It belongs to the bank. Same thing is true with any document that you fill out. Now, you don't have somebody running around behind you with a clipboard that's watching everything that you do and then writing that down and putting it into some dossier. And the lead ad here today, I told you that New York State has 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. All the states do the same thing. Let's try it. You want to get welfare. So you go down to the welfare office and say, "Gee, I'd like to get some welfare." Welfare lady hands a form to you and says, "Fill this out." And they want to know your name, address, and phone number, and a lot of personal information, like how much money do you make and where do you work, and you fill all that out. If you say, "I'm not going to give you all this information," they say, "Fine, no problem. You can't get welfare unless you give us all this information." So you give them all the information. Well, that's a voluntary act. Voluntary act. Your social security number was a secret until you went down and said, "I want welfare." So somebody says to me, "Well, you mean to tell me that I can't have privacy if I'm on welfare?" That's right. That's because the borrower is servant to the lender. Borrowers are servant to lenders. And if you're on welfare, you're a servant, not a master. Somebody says, "Well, that's not right." I don't know if it's right or wrong. I don't decide what's right and wrong. I don't decide what's good and bad. I don't decide what the law is or isn't. I don't make those laws. I'm just a reporter. I'm here to tell you that's the way it works. So if you want privacy, you can't be on welfare. That's how simple that is. Let's try credit. Want to buy a car? So you go down to the Ford dealer or the GM dealer and say, "I want to buy a car." And they say, "Okay, well, that car is $20,000. You say, "Well, I don't have $20,000. Guy says, "That's no problem. Finance it." And you say, "That's a good idea. How much are the payments?" And he says, $600 a month. You say, "Gosh, I want to buy the car." He slips this piece of paper in front of you and says, "Here, fill out this credit application." You fill out the credit application, and what do they ask you? "Well, where do you work? How much money do you make? Are you married? How many kids do you have? And show us your last tax return." There are no secrets in credit. Now, I'm not on welfare, and I'm not indebted to anybody, so I haven't had to give that information out to anybody. Remember, if you have credit, you don't have privacy. If you have welfare, you don't have privacy. Now, the Supreme Court's weighed in on the subject, and they have a term that they use. It's called the expectation of privacy. Do you have a reasonable expectation to privacy? Well, not when you go down to the bank and fill out a financial statement. Not when you walk into a public agency and say, "Give me some kind of largesse off of the public dole." No privacy there. Let's try licenses. You go to college, you come out, and you get a real estate degree, or you get a doctor's degree, or you get a dentist degree. Now you want to go out and practice your profession. I think there's about 40 of these. I went through them with you the other day. I think there's about 40 of these professions out here that I identified. There's probably another 40 that I didn't. Is there any expectation to privacy in a profession? Answer: none. Zero. Zilch. Just try it. You go down and say, well, see, if I'm going to practice my profession as a doctor, then I have to have a license. So you go down to the public agency and you say, gee, give me a license. And they say, well, what's your name and address and phone number and where do you live and how much money do you make and blah, blah, blah. And you got to fill this thing out. And is there any expectation to privacy with a license? None. Zero. Zilch. So if you're on the dole, if you're into credit, or if you've got a professional license, the Fourth Amendment does not apply to you. These are government enterprises. If you want to participate in these enterprises, these are public enterprises. Now go to Hale versus Henkel, cited at 201 U.S. 43. Go to page 75, and they'll tell you the answer to that. Individuals have a right to privacy. Corporations do not. And you don't have to go down and get a corporate charter. All you have to do is act in a corporate capacity. If you act like a corporation, you'll be treated like one. Do corporations have an expectation to privacy? None. Zero. Zilch. So anytime you go down and you create one of these business entities, like a doing business as, or a corporation, trust, foundation, offshore company, any of these kinds of activities or enterprises, you got to fill out paperwork and file it with the state. All of that information is public information. You get it from the Secretary of State. All right, now can you see that in a corporate or in a DBA capacity, there's no privacy? Welfare is no privacy, credit's no privacy, and professions has no privacy. All right, let's turn the coin over. Who has a right or an expectation to privacy? Well, let's just take one example. I'll use myself. I used to be in public business, and I had no privacy and complained a lot. Then one day, I closed my corporation. I got off the dole. I quit the professions and got out of my corporate capacity. Now I'm back to the status of an individual under Hale versus Henkel and I operate a school. School's not licensed, nor does it need be licensed. We're not open to the public. Somebody says, how do you do business if you're not open to the public? I do it privately. It's what private business is all about. Private businesses don't advertise. Somebody said, and they always get snotty, snippy. They get dumb on purpose. Well, how do you do business if you don't advertise? Guy asked me one time, he said, how do you live without income? And I said, very well, thank you. How do you live without income? The answer is, I live very well. Thank you. You know, there was life before income, and I predict that there will be life after income. Income is an aberration. It's only been with us for 85 years. Came about 1914 or 15, 90 years ago. And like paper money, it'll disappear. It'll go by the boards. You know, people have been buying, selling, and trading and doing business, and they've been doing it privately for thousands of years. Of course, people have been doing public business for thousands of years. These two forms of business have been going on side by side for long, long periods of time. And the choice that you make is, well, how do I want to conduct business? Now, some years ago, I ran a corporation and then complained about my privacy. Complained about government agents and government activists coming in there, and they wanted to audit my payroll journals, and they wanted to see if I was cheating my employees out of their overtime, and they wanted to see if my employees were wearing hard hats and steel-toed shoes, and see if I was paying minimum wage, and all these things come up. Well, I haven't seen a government agent around me since 1981. 24 years. I haven't had a government agent knock on my door in 24 years. I had one write to me, though. I had the Missouri Department of Vocational Education write me a letter, and they said, how come you don't have a license? I wrote them a letter back and said, because I'm in private business. That's easy enough. I told you the other day about a trader that I met in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Let me just kind of reiterate that again. This guy, when I asked him, what did he trade? He said, I trade anything. And he had a pocket full of Krugerrands that he put up on the counter there. Probably had $10,000-$20,000 worth of, well, I'd say $10,000 worth of gold in his hand there, and he put it on the counter. And I was running a company with 30 employees producing $100,000 a month, $1 million a year. I couldn't put $10,000 on the counter. I couldn't put $10,000 on the counter in $100 bills, let alone gold coin. I had lots of credit, lots of letters from the bank. I had financial statements and balance sheets and all kinds of paper. I didn't have any privacy. This guy had all the privacy in the world. The only people that know what you're doing business in is you and your customer. Well, let's take a look now at how that works. You walk in my door and you say, well, I'd like to buy your cow, Mr. Gordon. And I say, okay, which one you want? And you point her out and I say, okay, well, here's what I want for that cow. Now, if I do business, and I do it this way, I say, well, I got to have $3,000 for that cow. And I want you to write me a check. All of a sudden, I'm in public business. That check comes through a public bank, a public institution, regulated and controlled under Hale versus Henkel. Let's try it this way. I look at you and I say, well, I'd like to have about 7 ounces of gold for that cow, maybe 8. Yeah, give me about 8 ounces. And 8 ounces today at $400 a piece, about $3,200. Okay? So you reach in your pocket and you pull out 8 ounces of gold. Let's say they're $50 gold pieces. And times 8 is $400. So I write you a bill of sale for $400. Face value on the gold. $400. You follow that? Got your pencil sharpened? Instead of charging you $3,200, I charge you $400 for that. Now, if we do that, we can do business like this up until $7,200 worth. And if we really got uppity about it, we could use $20 double eagles, $20 gold pieces. What's 8 times 20? That's $160. Instead of $400 to $160 worth of business. Now, these coins are numismatic, and they trade at face value, and they're legal tender for all debts, public and private. I didn't make the law. I'm just going to report to you that it's in Title 31, Section 5102 through 5112. Go read it for yourself. I didn't write it. Congress did. I'm not cheating anybody on taxes. I didn't make the law. I'm just here to report to it. I was watching TV the other day, and Jerry Spence out in Wyoming, he took a tax... He took a tax allowance over there, and God, the press just came unhinged. They went out and they said, "Well, Mr. Spence, this isn't right. Why don't you get on TV and explain to us why you're cheating the American taxpayers?" And old Spence said, "I ain't telling anybody jack squat," and he didn't say anything to anybody. He's not breaking any laws. Congress makes the laws, and he takes advantage of them. I don't have to sit here and explain to you why I'm doing what I'm doing. I don't make the laws. I can't repeal the law. I can't make the law. I can't change the law. I can't interpret the law. I don't do jack squat about it. If it's good, I take advantage of it. If it isn't, I try to avoid it. That's the difference between public and private business. Now, private entrepreneurs dealing in gold and silver coin, one transaction at a time. You walk out of here with my cow, I give you a bill of sale, you give me the gold, I put the gold in a hole in the ground, and who in the hell knows about the transaction? See how simple that is? There's just two of us in the deal. And let's take a look at another deal. You come over here, and you say you want to buy a cow, and I say, okay, and you say, well, I'm going to give you $3,200, and you write me a check. Write me a check for $3,200. Okay, well now, I'm in the transaction, I'm the seller, you're in the transaction, you're the buyer, and the bank's in the transaction, because they're a third-party money lender. See, there's no money here, they're going to lend the money, the credit, for you to do business. This brings the Federal Reserve in on the deal, because the bank is chartered by the Federal Reserve. This brings the Treasury and the IRS and the Congress into this because they make the laws that regulate the banks and the Federal Reserve. Look at all the people now that are involved in the transaction when you write a check. Can you see why I don't take checks? You know, that's like going to bed with your wife in an apartment house and you leave the doors and windows open. And then you wonder why there's no privacy. Shucks, you're better off take your wife out and do it in the back of a Chevy van or something, you know, out in the boondocks where you can be by yourselves. Now, if I wanted to do public business, you know, I'd get out there and do it. If I want to be private, I don't want the bank involved. Now, let's try another one over here. Let's suppose that you come over here and you say, well, gee, George, I'd like to buy your cow, but I don't have enough money, so I'm going to go borrow the money. Oh, you're going to go borrow it. So you go down to the bank and you borrow the money. They, in turn, give you a checking account. You come out here and write me a check. See, we're right back where we were when we had the check. Now we got a credit transaction. The bank now owns the cow. I'm selling my cow to the bank. You got an equitable interest in the bank's cow. I don't get paid. I get discharged. Now I've got to file a tax return. I got $3,200 worth of income here. Now, God, the IRS is involved in my business. I got the bank and the IRS involved in my business because you want to do credit business. I don't like doing business with people that can't pay their bills. People that don't have money. People that don't have wealth, don't have assets. And you see where we're going here? Now, let me tell you a little story. You look up property in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, and it tells you a little story here. Let's take a look at what property is. And the dictionary will tell you that story. Property is, it is proper to observe that in some cases, the moment that the owner loses his possession, he also loses his property or right in the thing. Referring to the historical development of the law relating to chattels, it is said that possession is prima facie evidence of ownership. The man with the better right to possession has the property. Thus, this better right to possession was the only form of property, either of lands or chattels, known to the early common law. Possession is the law. This law comes from Moses. Moses gave us the law on property. Property is the right and interest which a man has to lands and chattels to the exclusion of others. The sole and despotic dominion which one man claims and exercises over the external things of the world in total exclusion of the right of any other individual in the universe. If God Almighty can make a claim to it, you can't own it. Now, the right to property comes from God. You know, if under the common law, that is under the law of the commoners, under the law of Moses, codified by Alfred the Great in 872 A.D., you have a right to own a wife. You have a right to own children. Not today. You got a marriage license, remember? Not only did you lose your privacy, you also lost your right to own the chattel. You gave your children to the state. You passed your seed through the fire to Moloch when you got a birth certificate for the child. State owns your wife. State owns your child. Bank owns your house. GMAC owns your car. Oh yeah, you're driving a car. You got a wife. You got some children. You have an equitable interest in all of the above, but you don't own any of them to the exclusion of everybody else in the universe. So when the definition identifies everybody else in the universe, it excludes God Almighty Himself from owning your property. Now, the following have been held to be property. If you have a certificate of membership in the Board of Trade, a common law action, the right to recover damages from a common carrier for breach of contract, the office of a professor of a chartered university who can be removed only for cause, a man's right to his calling, the right to labor, the right to labor to practice a profession. The privilege and capacity to exercise the rights common to every man, that dominion or indefinite right which one may lawfully exercise over particular objects and generally to the exclusion of all others. Quotations from the stock exchanges. You know, these things are property and property rights. Now, there are some things that are not property. Now, a person has no property nor vested interest in any rule of the common law. You have no property in a liquor license. You have no property in the mere idea unprotected by a statute or contract. Now, there are certain things that you have a property right in, certain things that you don't. When Moses came down off the mountain, he gave us property and property rights. Then about 1933, we elected a guy by the name of Franklin D. Roosevelt, and he converted our property rights into equitable interest holder in due course. That's what we are today. We're equitable interest holders in due course of somebody else's property. The bank owns it. The government owns it. And they tell us how to use it. And that makes all the sense in the world. For the government to tell you how to use your automobile, after all, it's the government that owns it. The government should tell you how to use your house because, after all, it's the government that owns your house. You don't. You see, if you owned your home, you wouldn't need a building permit to add a room onto it. If you owned your automobile, you wouldn't need a license to drive it. See how simple these little things are? Now, God thought that the ownership of property was pretty important and gave us a law that said, thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not steal is the basis of all personal property ownership, personal property rights. Without thou shalt not steal, you cannot have private property. And we've abolished the Bible, we've abolished the Ten Commandments, and we've abolished the law of God and thrown it out of our society and our culture. We've replaced it with the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. From each according to his ability and to each according to his need. First plank calls for the abolition of all right to property. We've done that. We Americans are practicing communists. We do not practice private property or property rights. Now, we complain a lot. We complain about OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, and all these government agencies, banks, insurance companies, and all these people interfering with our rights. Rights to do what? A right to add a room onto somebody else's house? A right to drive somebody else's car on somebody else's road? A right to go to bed with somebody else's woman? A right to discipline somebody else's kid? And you claim you've got rights? I mean, come on, boys and girls, it's time to wake up and smell the coffee. Now, when we're talking about property and property rights, there's an old case that came out of W.L. Thompson versus D.C. Smith, chief of police of the city of Lynchburg, that has a lot to do with the right to property, and your right to travel is a property right. Your right to travel is a property right, but your right to travel in an automobile has now been reduced to a privilege. Now, how did that happen? Why is it that it's a privilege to drive an automobile? How did government convert your right to travel in the usual and ordinary conveyance of the day into a privilege granted by the state? I thought that you people out there, the citizens, were the masters and the sovereigns, and the state, the government, was your agent, your servant. That's what I thought. But now the state is your master, and you're a feudal serf on the state's land, living in the state's house, driving the state's car, married to the state's woman, raising the state's children. I'm going to take a break here, and let me give you a couple of pieces of information, and then we'll come back and we'll take a look here at this thing called private business and why it is that so many of us practice public business and don't have a good grasp on what private business is all about. Remember, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. org. Now, the Gordon Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page at the website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's 417-273-4967, or you can go to the webpage, georgegordon.org, click on the email, send an email request. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Again, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, go to the website georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Talking about private business tonight. Well, in W.L. Thompson versus D.C. Smith, Chief of Police of the City of Lynchburg, September 12, 1930, Supreme Court of Virginia tells us constitutional law and natural rights. The use of the public highways, the right of a citizen to travel on a public highway and to transport his property thereon, either by horse-drawn carriage or wagon or automobile. That's not a mere privilege which a city may permit or prohibit at will, but it is a common right which he has under his right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's not a privilege. It's not a goodie given to you by the state. It's a right that you own. Well, you used to own it until you gave it away, until you threw it away like the prodigal son. Going on, the Supreme Court of Virginia said in 1930, not too long ago, 75 years ago, they said, now the right of a citizen to travel on a public highway and to transport his property thereon. Not somebody else's property. To transport your property, his property thereon, in the ordinary course of life and business is a common right. Not a privilege, a common right which he has under his right to enjoy life and liberty, to acquire and possess property, and to pursue happiness and safety. Now, it includes the right in so doing to use the ordinary and usual conveyance of the day, and under the existing modes of travel includes the right to drive a horse-drawn carriage or wagon thereon, or to operate an automobile thereon for the usual and ordinary purposes of life and business. It is not a mere privilege, like the privilege of moving a house in the street, operating a business stand in the street, or transporting persons or property for hire along the street, which a city may permit or prohibit at will. Now, somehow or another, boys and girls, our rights to operate an automobile, a wagon, or to ride a horse has somehow been changed since 1930, hasn't it? See, all you people have driver's licenses, don't you? Now, this doctrine has been pronounced most often in cases involving the granting, refusing, and revoking of licenses or permits to sell intoxicating liquors or to do other things which, because of their character, are or tend to be injurious, as, for instance, keeping a gambling house or a body house or operating a junk or pawn shop. And it's also been applied to cases involving permits or licenses to transport persons or property for hire along the streets. See Taylor versus Smith and the cases there cited. But this doctrine has no application to permits issued for the purpose of regulating the exercise of the common right to operate a private automobile on the streets of a city. Notice the words private automobile. Anybody got one of those? All of the automobiles that I know of are registered, licensed, and carry license plates. They're all owned by the state. And that's the final analysis. That's why you have a license plate on both ends of it. Those automobiles belong to the state. That manufacturer's certificate of origin is given to the state. You have an equitable right to it. You do have some ownership interest, but it's not a property right. If you had a property right, you could exclude everybody, including God Almighty Himself. Now try to exclude the state from the regulation of your automobile. You know, it's kind of like going down to Hertz and you rent a car. And here you are driving around in a Hertz car. And as long as you pay your rent every week, they'll let you run around in their car. And as long as you follow all their rules and regulations, they'll let you run around in their car. Now, the first time you get uppity with them and you don't send them their money, and the first time you violate one of their rules, they'll take their car away from you. That's not your car. That car belongs to the Hertz company. And the state will do the same thing. You pay your fee, you know, your registration, you get your license, and you follow all the rules, and they'll let you operate their car on their roads. And if you get uppity with them, they'll take their car away from you because it's not your car. Now, I know you went down to the Ford dealer, and I know you signed a contract, and you're out here driving around, and you park the car, and you wash it, and you take good care of it, but it's not yours. Any more than the Hertz car is yours. Now, that's just where reality is. When you're dealing here with a horse-drawn carriage or wagon or automobile, it's not a mere privilege which a city may permit or prohibit at will. It's a common right, common law right, which you have under your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, and where did the cities and the states get in to the game of regulating and controlling your rights? Well, it came from commerce. It came from commercial paper. It came from you when you abdicated your rights under the law of Moses, the Ten Commandments, the law of God, in favor of the Roman civil law under the state. You do the same thing when you join the army. You waive your constitutional rights and voluntarily bring yourself under the uniform code of military justice. You change your law. You change your God. We did that. We got a little uppity with our God back in 1 Samuel chapter 8, about 1100 B.C., and we said, we're going to have a king like all the nations around us. God came down to Samuel and said, now wait a minute, boys and girls, hold it. You're making a mistake here. This isn't very smart. And we said, get the hell out of our lives, God. Nevertheless, we're going to have a king like all the nations around us. So God, he did what you wanted. He just got the hell out of your life, and he let you waive your property rights. You want to practice communism? Get after it. Then don't sit there and get mad at God because you threw your rights away. I mean, you had rights, and then you threw them away. All right, let's take a look at a unique old-timey case here that's called Wolf Company versus Industrial Court, 1923. They incited at 262 U.S. 522. For those of you that want to check me out on this, why don't you go to 262 U.S., U.S. Supreme Court, page 522, called Charles Wolf Packing Company versus Court of Industrial Relations of the State of Kansas. Here's the syllabus. Paragraph 2, business is said to be clothed with a public interest justifying some public regulation may be divided into three classes. All right. Do you get that? Business is said to be clothed with a public interest, public business, justifying some public regulation may be divided into three classes. All right, so here's the three classes of public business, and then we'll take a look at the one class of private business. What is it that distinguishes the Gordon Law School from the University of California at Berkeley? What is it that distinguishes private business from public business? Wolf Company versus Industrial Court. A. Those businesses which are carried on under authority of a public grant of privileges expressly or impliedly imposing the affirmative duty of rendering public service demanded by any member of the public. Businesses such as common carriers and public utilities. So if you want to go out here and operate an electric utility company, or you want to go out and operate a Garrett or Yellow Freight Lines, you're going to be regulated and controlled. Those are public businesses. They don't lend themselves to the character of a private business and personal private property rights. Kind of like going down here and getting a franchise for a Denny's restaurant. That's a public business. We take MasterCard and Visa. It's regulated by the state and the health departments and OSHA and the EPA and the all these government agencies and regulatory bodies. So anytime that you get involved with public business, then you're going to be regulated and controlled. So if you don't want regulation and control, then we have to stay in private business. So common carriers are out of the question and public utilities. Number two, or B here. Certain occupations regarded as exceptional, the public interest attaching to which, recognized from earliest times, has survived the period of arbitrary regulation of all trades and callings by parliament or colonial legislatures, such as inns, cabs, and grist mills. Want to operate a Holiday Inn? Want to operate a yellow cab? Want to operate a grist mill? All right, now what's a grist mill? Well, that's where you take your wheat in and have it ground. Any business that's open to the public. Any business that says, we take MasterCard or Visa. Y'all come. You advertise in the yellow pages. Or you advertise on radio, television, newspapers, etc. As the court said, businesses that affect trade, commerce, business, or industry, which affect a public interest. Affecting a public interest. So if I went up here on Highway 160 and I put a billboard up there that said, y'all come, Gordon's Law School is now open, we take Visa and MasterCard, advertise in the yellow pages, radio and television, that's public business. Public business. Why is it public business? Because it affects a public interest. You're not dealing privately now, you're dealing with the public. All of you people out there listening to me in radio land, that affects the public interest. So when I'm on the radio, I have to follow all of these rules and regulations that the FCC sets down. That's why I have to read to you these little caveats and tell you, hey, these opinions, you know, are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the opinions of the or beliefs of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of the radio station. And that's because it affects the public interest. Now, there's times when I want to affect the public interest and there's no privacy. And then there's times when I want to go into the bedroom with my wife, close the door, lock it, close the windows, and shut the world out. It's none of your business what's going on in here. We do the same thing, you know, when we bring students in here. We lock the door and we close the world out. And what goes on in here is not the world's business. It doesn't concern OSHA. The EPA doesn't concern the public. It's called our right to contract. So at Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution, it says government is prohibited from impairing the obligation of private contracts. And so what we do is we enter into private contracts and we do business privately. It's a wild new concept, a wild new idea. This time has come. Third, C, here in Wolf Company versus Industrial Court, other businesses which have come to have such a peculiar relation to the public that government regulation has been superimposed upon them, where the owner, by devoting his business to the public use, in effect grants the public an interest in that use, and thereby subjects himself to regulations to the extent of such an interest. Well, now, I could do that if I were to hold myself out to the public. Now, did you notice that we tell you every broadcast or so, you know, not necessarily everyone, but pretty often, we tell you that the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement only. Article 1, Section 10, private contract. Private contract only. If you come up here and knock on the door and say, gee, I want to go to school, I'd tell you, gee, you can't come here. This is a private school. Go away. Butt out. Not welcome here. See how simple that is? By invitation only. It's kind of like a birthday party. You know, only invited guests, a wedding. You know, do you have your invitation? No invitation, and you can't come in. I know, it's a wild new concept. It's wild and new because Coca-Cola is a public business and they're advertising everywhere constantly. And so we watch Coca-Cola and PepsiCo and we say, well, gosh, to succeed in business, I guess we have to have radio and television and newspapers, and we gotta advertise and take MasterCard and Visa and deal in checks and commercial paper and licenses and stocks and bonds and all these things. Well, boys and girls, if you want all of those public businesses, all of those appurtenances that go with those public businesses, then you have to accept all of the regulations and controls that go with them. You want to go public with your company? The SEC comes into play. You want to hire employees? OSHA comes into play. You want to pay them with commercial paper? Wage and hour comes into play. You want to deal privately? You can do that too, by contract. Now let me tell you a little story here. I was up in Fairbanks, Alaska, and a young fellow was at one of my seminars, and he was a little bit, he just frankly couldn't believe what he was hearing. And he said, you know, I'd like to be private and I'd like to do business privately, but you can't. You know, this is the modern world and you can't have the kind of privacy that we used to have 50 or 100 years ago. And I said, well, why is that? Why not? How come I can't have that privacy? He said, I said, just name some kind of an enterprise in which I can't have privacy. And he said, well, you can't have privacy when you call the power company to turn on your power. And I said, why not? What is it about the power company that's public? And he said, well, when you go down to the power company to sign up to get electric power, you have to fill out an application and you have to give them all this information or they won't sell you power. And I asked the young fellow, I said, well, who told you that? And he said, well, everybody knows that. And I said, well, I don't know that. I buy electric power and I didn't tell the power company anything. I just went down and bought it just like buying a pair of hinges at the hardware store. He said, why, you have to have credit, and you have to fill out the credit application. You have to tell them where you work and who your employer is and give them your social security number and all of this stuff. And I said, no, that's not true. You don't have to do all that. And he said, well, why does everybody do it? And I said, well, I'm not quite sure why you do it. I don't do it because I want to maintain my privacy. Let me ask you a question. Let's suppose you went into Denny's restaurant and you sit down and you want to order lunch, and the waitress comes over with a clipboard, and on the clipboard is an application for credit, and it asks you for your name and address and phone number and where do you work and how much money do you make, and they want to see last year's tax return and maybe 3 years average income and a financial statement and all of that before they'll take your order for lunch. What would you think of that? And he said, well, that would be crazy. I said, okay. Now you go into a doctor's office and they hand you an 8.5 by 11 paper and they put it on a clipboard and they ask you for your name and address and where do you work and your social security number. And they ask you whether or not you got hemorrhoids or piles and whether or not you've ever had a mental disorder and whether you beat your wife or not. And they ask you all those questions and you answer them. Well, now, what's the difference between Denny's restaurant and the doctor's office? He kind of looked at me like, I don't know. I said, neither do I. What in the hell business does the doctor have asking you these questions? Or is it that when you leave Denny's, they expect you to pay them on the way out? But when you go to the doctor, they don't take money. They take insurance. They take credit cards. They expect that you're going to pay them at the end of the month. They expect that there's an insurance policy. They expect some kind of commercial agreement. They don't expect to get paid. So they want a credit application. Power company's the same way. Just walk into the power company and say, I don't want any credit. I want to pay a deposit. So I said, well, could you show me how to do that? And I said, certainly. And he said, well, I just moved, and I need to get the power turned on in my new apartment. I said, that's not a problem in the world. Let's go down there and do it. So the next day, we went down to the power company, and nice young lady, nice young girl, she just came over and said, can I help you? She said, yeah, I want to turn the power on. And she pulled out this application and handed it to him. So here, fill this out. So we went over and we sat down and said, okay, well, let me show you how to fill that out. And it says name. How do you want the billing done? And he said, well, I think I ought to have the bill come to me. I said, well, what's your name? And he said, John Chatworth. And I said, well, why don't you write in John Chatworth if that's the way you want the bill made up? So he wrote his name, John Chatworth. Okay. And then it says social security number. And I said, do you want these people to know what your social security number is? And he says, no. Well, and what you do is you write over there where it says social security number and you write Fourth Amendment objection because you've got one, but you're objecting to using it. So you see, it wouldn't be proper for you to put religious objector in there because you're a Catholic and you don't have any religious objections to Social Security. The Roman Catholic Church doesn't object to Social Security. So just write in there the truth. You know, it's kind of a wild concept. Just tell them the truth. Tell them you object on Fourth Amendment grounds. He did. He put Fourth Amendment objection. And I put in their employer. And I said, well, what difference does it make who your employer is? And that's what he wanted to know. And I said, well, does that mean that if you don't have an employer, they won't sell you electricity, but if you do have an employer, that they will sell you electricity? I mean, you know, when you go into Denny's restaurant, do they hand you a form and say, who's your employer? What the hell difference does it make whether I'm employed or not? Maybe I'm unemployed. Maybe I'm on unemployment. Maybe I'm a deadbeat. What the hell difference does it make? I came in to buy lunch. My employment status is irrelevant and immaterial. Whether I'm buying a hamburger at Denny's or I'm buying electric power from the power company. So then why don't you put Fourth Amendment objection there? So he went through and went to ask him, how much money do you make? Where do you work? How long have you worked there? Fourth Amendment objection. I oftentimes put in First Amendment objection because I'm, or none. See, I don't have a social security number. So when it says, what's your social security number? I write none. N-O-N-E. Don't have one. Isn't that kind of wild? He got all through, and the only thing that he had on there attached to this guy was his name, John Chatworth. So he passed it in, and the girl said, that's unacceptable. We can't take that. If you don't fill that out, we're not gonna turn your power on. So I said to the young woman, I said, how long has this been going on? And she said, this is company policy. I said, oh. They had one other company policy. You had to buy at least one share of stock. It was a cooperative. It was a Fairbanks Light and Power Co-op. And we put in there, we don't want to buy any stock, and we don't want to answer these questions. We just want to pay the deposit. And the deposit at that time, back in the, '80s, I guess, was $150. So I said, here, put the $150 on the counter. He put three $50 bills on the counter and said, here, we're going to pay for the power in advance. That's the purpose for a deposit. It's to pay in advance, cash up front. And this girl, she said, well, you don't need to pay this deposit if you'll fill out this form and give us this information. And the guy said, well, I don't want to give you the information. She said, well, if you don't give us the information, we can't give you the credit. And that's what I said. We don't want credit. We want to pay cash in advance. Here's the $150. And as soon as we get up to $150 worth of power, shut it off. That's what the deposit's for, to guarantee that you don't run out and don't pay them. See how simple that is? Pay your deposit, and you can have privacy. Well, the girl didn't know, so she went and got the manager. He came out, and he said, well, you have to buy the share of stock. And I said, well, how long has this discriminatory policy been going on? And he said, what's discriminatory about? I said, well, we came into your store, and we want to buy electricity. We don't want to invest in your company. Let's try it this way. You go into Denny's restaurant, and you say, I want to order lunch. And she says, no, not until you buy at least one share of Denny's stock. Hold it. Denny's holds itself out as a restaurant, not a stockbroker. I didn't come in here to buy Denny's stock. I didn't come in here to buy stock. I came in here to buy lunch. And I said, what we want to do is we want to sue you and Fairbank Light and Power for a discriminatory practice requiring us to buy stock. We don't want to do that. Well, he called their legal department. They came back and said, well, in your case, we think we'll waive that requirement, too. So the young fellow said, well, where do you want this power turned on? And he said, 5709 Ridge Road. Okay. Well, is there going to be anybody there tomorrow? And we'll come out and turn it on. They went out and turned the power on. So they got his name. And if he'd have put an IP Daily or Harry Wolf on there, they would have delivered the power time. He's paying for it up front. If you walked into Denny's restaurant and the girl said, what's your name? And you said, IP Daily. The hell difference does it make what your name is? I'm here to buy lunch. What difference does it make what your name is? I came in here to buy electricity. I go into Home Depot. What difference does it make what your name is? I came in here to buy a pair of hinges. See how simple that is? It's just a matter of using your head. Use your head. It's a wild new concept. Okay, we're about out of time. We're going to have to give you our closing soliloquy here. And we'll come back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, tell you some more wild stories and give you some more information on how to live your life and do it privately. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, and we're also heard worldwide over the Internet. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And keep in mind that the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, the producer says time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.